This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with Wells Tech. This is episode 387 for Tuesday, April 7th. 2015. It's 4 o'clock Tuesday afternoon. I'm in Austin, Texas, and Sally, where are you?
I'm chilling out in New Ulm, Minnesota. Actually, it's warm because I'm basking in the Easter afterglow.
Wonderful. Did you have a good Easter? Mm-hmm.
I did. It was wonderful. We made a massive tour of southern Minnesota and worshipped in three different churches during the Easter season.
Oh, why is that?
That was a lot of fun. We went to the cities for a day of play at the Science Museum on Thursday and made it back to St. Peter, Minnesota, worshipped in District President Pastor Degner's church there in St. Peter, which was really nice. Hadn't had a chance to worship there before, so that was a treat for us. And then worshipped in our own congregation, St. Paul's in New Ulm, for Good Friday, and also Easter for Kids on Saturday. And then we made it up to my mother and father-in-law's congregation, Grace, in Hutchinson, Minnesota, and heard Pastor Tobison there for Easter Sunday. Joy and delight.
Yep, we also worshipped with the district president. Monday, Thursday, on our way down here to Austin, we stopped in Downers Grove, Illinois, and Pastor David Richo preached the word to us. That's our former congregation, so we like to swing by there when we can. It just happened that we were going that direction, and we're happening through about that time of their services, so that was nice. And then got down here to Austin in time for sunrise service. Out in the Texas drizzle, wasn't bad though. God did not open the heavens on us, but it was a beautiful service. And my son and daughter-in-law were singing, and daughter-in-law played trumpet in the services. So it was
awesome.
A very cool morning. Yeah, loved it.
And met up with the district president down there as well.
Yeah, that's right. I heard district president on Monday, Thursday, and Easter morning. So Don Patterson is the district president down here. So it's a very regal Holy Week for both of us.
I guess so. We need a Wells Tech tour of all the district president congregations.
Huh? Right. we're enjoying our time. So I'm on vacation, if you can't tell by my dress. If you're not watching, I'm a little more casual than usual, a little bit different surroundings. I'm in my son's house here in Austin, and took some time out to do our little old podcast.
Well, thanks for doing that. We're happy you joined us, especially timely, because today's topic is all about what to pack in your computer bag. Maybe you packed up a bag or two to take with you to Texas.
Yeah, normally I can't not pack a bag. I can't think of recent vacations where I haven't brought some computing along, and that's okay. I try and lay off as much as I can, but everybody travels at some point, and we thought we do this show every once in a while. I don't know if we've done it for a year or so, but it's kind of fun to just kind of share with our audience what we take along with and why. And I do quite a bit of traveling, and Sally, you're doing more traveling lately as well. And there's just some things that you need to take along, things that you need to be productive with, whether it's a business or pleasure trip. And so we thought we'd share what's in the bag today. So, Sally,
yeah,
why don't you... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm going to make a Digo link to this or something, because it never fails that I forget something that belongs in my bag. So hopefully by going over it with you, I'm going to have it stored in a way that I can use it as a checklist or something so I don't forget. So.
Yep. Especially if you're in and out of the bag and use some of these things, you know, in the office as well. You've got to kind of collect your stuff and whatever. Why don't you, ladies first today, Sally?
Thank you, sir.
What's in the bag for you?
Well, obviously you're going to have a computer in your bag, and my go-to computer these days is an Asus ZenBook. It's really small, thin, lightweight laptop, and really easy to carry. It actually came with its own little envelope that it fits in, so sleek and not difficult to get through airport security with at all. 13.3-inch touchscreen, so I don't think I'd do much good without that, although there have been vacations where I'm really supposed to be away where I will leave my computer at home, and then I can't survive without my iPad. So always have my iPad along, great device. I think it's especially friendly to my eyes. I also have my smartphone, my iPhone. I have a 5S along, and I use it primarily for a hotspot. So my device of choice is definitely the iPad because I can see it a whole lot better, but I need the internet connection because this isn't connected. So those are the big three, the computing devices that are in the bag. What about you, Martin?
iPads are interesting, and I carry an iPad usually wherever I go as well. I have the a little bit later model, the iPad Air, not the Air 2. I was just in the Apple store here in Austin and saw the Air 2, which is quite a bit lighter than this one. But I think for the price, and I think these are the Air 2s are have dropped quite a bit in price, so they're actually a pretty good deal at this point. But yeah, I use them for reading. I have books on this through Kindle, and then I will watch podcasts and just general quick emails. Those kinds of things are good on the iPad. And I've taken lately on the iPad also doing blog posts. I've been trying to post every day if I can. Kind of have a morning routine where I'll read the verse of the day and write a quick blog post about, you know, my thoughts on that verse, and just kind of a devotional routine. And then prayer lists and those kinds of things are on here as well. Plus, you know, just general fun stuff. So I think the iPad is a good tool for that. And watched the Giants game last night a little bit on the iPad. So it's something that I take almost everywhere with me. And it's so light, it just slides right into the bag. My computer, and I've got I use a couple depending on what I'm doing, but the one that I probably travel with the most is the MacBook Pro. And I do that because very often I'm traveling on a Tuesday, and this is the device that I use for podcasting, because it's got the Adobe suite on it. It's a nice large screen, and I can edit video and edit audio on it. So it's the one that I think is probably the most durable as well. Sally, you used to have one very similar to this, and boy, with these unibody cases, they're almost indestructible. I think they're one of the best made laptops that you can buy. Now, you're going to pay a premium price for these, but I would say they probably wear better than you know, most other computers. The trackpad stays nice and fluid, and the screen's, you know, beautiful, nice, large, just a good device. And I can put Windows and the Mac operating system on here, so it works as a good multi-purpose machine. So that's what I use predominantly for computing, and that's what I'm podcasting on now. And like you, I also carry a phone right now. I'm using the Samsung Galaxy Note 4, and I use this as a Wi-Fi hotspot as well. So that is that's really essential, especially when you're traveling, whether it be in the car or at the hotel or wherever it is. I find that when I'm doing presentations, I'll almost default to, you know, doing the hotspot versus trying to trust the hotel Wi-Fi or the conference room Wi-Fi or the school's Wi-Fi wherever I am, because it's just, I know it's a known quantity, and if I've got a good signal, I know I'm going to get good speeds. And I'm not going to get blocked by firewalls, those kinds of things. So it's almost an indispensable tool, as well as, you know, just being a phone and the other things that that today's smartphones use.
I have to tell you, Martin, mine's an iPad 2, just not got the word Air in the middle. Mine's a 2 from maybe it's 4 years old now.
Right.
And it's
interesting
so
that,
really well.
That they're, and I think Apple's kind of struggling with this too, that they don't see kind of the refresh of the iPad that they do with the iPhone. You know, people are buying iPhones every 2 years or even sooner, but with iPads it's a little bit longer because a lot of the same apps work. You know, a lot of the iPads that people buy are Wi-Fi, so that's, you know, that's pretty standard. The only thing that's really changing is they get a little bit faster and a little bit lighter, so that's probably not the you know, the compelling buy that people need to say, hey, I'm going to spend, you know, X $100 to upgrade. They
right.
seem to kind of have a longer lasting value than, you know, maybe a phone does.
You mentioned a lot of great uses for your iPad. One thing I carry along with my iPad is a stylus.
Oh, yeah.
Got the little spongy tip on it, because I use it quite often as a note-taking device, especially in church. I love to take notes during the sermon on my iPad, and I have this great collection in my Notability app of some wonderful sermon notes and things. So nice to have it along for that purpose as well.
Does anybody else do that?
Does anybody else do that?
In your congregation? Are you the only one?
You know, I'm not sure if anybody else takes notes during the sermon that way, but there are many people in our Bible class who have their tablets with them set up on stands and things like that.
We're seeing that too as well. More people bringing iPads to church or using it, for, having the Bible, in the palm of their hand as well. But that's cool, and I think that's a great application. Does Notability then do handwriting recognition so you can search, or is it just something that you review and you have a system to index so you can go back and say, hey, this is the topic and I've got notes on it? Or is it just
We'll go with that last option and be hopeful that I approach that. You know, it probably does. I don't know. I typically turn it into a PDF and email it out to my children who aren't in church with me, so they have the sermon as well. So
that's awesome.
That's just how I use it. But
I think that's great.
And I'm on the church Wi-Fi, so that's pretty cool too, because the church has Wi-Fi. So very nice. One thing that neither of us mentioned that I thought of as you were talking was I sometimes bring along an iPad keyboard, especially if I'm not bringing my laptop. I actually have an external Bluetooth keyboard that I use that has a stand with it, and find that really valuable.
You use the Logitech one?
Yeah. So it's a great little keyboard. Really like it a lot. So do you bring a keyboard along or type your blog post on a keyboard?
I've actually tried to force myself into using the virtual keyboard. And I think it's a little bit slower, but I'm getting faster. And I like not having to bring the extra device and just kind of getting used to using the virtual keyboard. I mean, I'm a fairly fast typist and, touch typist, so I struggle with that a little bit because there's no feedback, at all when you're using the virtual keyboard. But I'm trying to kind of get used to it, and I'm probably sacrificing a little bit of speed for the convenience of not bringing a keyboard. But I think it's usable. The iPad screen is big enough. I don't think I could do that on the iPad Mini. I don't own one, but I think that would be a little bit tougher. I think the iPad has enough real estate where you're not feeling too cramped in the process. And if I'm doing something, more long form, I'm definitely going to bring the laptop out anyway. So,
speaking of keyboards, just for those of you that are interested, my husband is a Dvorak keyboard fan, and it always frustrates me when I sit down at his computer and try to type something, and he just smiles because he doesn't switch his keys around. He just knows what's what from the touch, and so he actually has a Dvorak keyboard on his laptop as well. So and changed his firmware keyboard as well. So
have you tried it?
Yeah, it's not for me. too QWERTY for, too QWERTY is too ingrained in my brain. So
yeah, I agree too. I don't think I gain enough speed, and I'm too old to learn something new, I think. So. But good for him. If that works for him, that's perfect.
Yeah. Can't live without the little extras, though, Martin. We haven't talked yet about things like the clicker that makes your slideshow advance magically, and it has a laser pointer included as well. This is a Kensington brand that I often use. I love my wireless Logitech mouse. I mentioned a wireless keyboard. I usually just bring along some simple earbuds. I like the over-the-ear kind so that I don't have to be coordinated enough to hold it in my ear and it not fall out like what you're doing right now on this podcast. I'm not very good at that. So so those are some of the extras. There's always tons of cables and electrical.
I know, and that seems to grow, right?
Yeah.
You've got all kinds of different connectors, and sometimes you need different lengths, and then the adapters that go with them.
Yeah,
absolutely. One thing, now that you mentioned cables, a couple things that I always bring along is power, because, let me pull it out of the bag here, and I think this has been a pick of mine in the past, but two things that I always carry along. One is this, what brand is this? Outlets to Go 3 USB. So it is extension cord, basically, a power strip that has three connections for power and then also a USB connector, and it'll plug into the wall. The cord is only maybe a foot long, but it's just enough to get me out behind the nightstand behind the hotel bed. So this comes in real handy so that you're not trying to move furniture around or whatever. So this comes in real handy. Also, I always take with me this Mophie external charger. So I forget what milliamp this is. In fact, I can look it up here. I'm not doing any screen sharing today, even though I open up all the tabs in preparation for this. 4,000, I think it's a 4,000 milliamp battery, so it will actually charge the iPad or certainly the phone, and comes with connectors, and then obviously you have to recharge it once you discharge it, but it'll work with the whatever kind of device you have as long as you have the appropriate cable. So if you're on the road, this is especially good, or if you're getting off the plane and you need to charge up, this is a good thing to have.
Yeah, Drapers have one of those as well. But, you know, what we found is as we're driving down the road, if we're not flying or whatever, we have plenty of adapters for the car cigarette lighters, and we share those. So the boys will say, are you charged up yet? I need to plug in quick, you know. And so we're constantly kind of shuffling our power amongst ourselves.
Yeah, so. Leslie Bergman asked a question here in the Q&A. By the way, if you have a question and you're watching live, just hit that Ask a Question button. She says, how about batteries for all those devices? And I think the tools that I mentioned are the things that, you know, all the ones that I have are rechargeable batteries, with the exception of my Bose headset, which was also a pick a while back. So I've got the Quiet Comfort 25 headset, and they do take a battery to do the noise canceling, and they have a nice compartment here for a AAA battery that you can plug in, as well as kind of the old fashioned. Airline plugs, this double plug that a lot of the older seats had on airlines, so they even have an adapter for that. So that's less and less used, but they've kind of accounted for that. These are really great on the if you do any flying, to kind of the crying babies right next to you kind of dulls the din a little bit.
Yeah, my mouse takes a regular battery, and I always carry one of those in my bag as well. So
yep. Batteries are a necessary thing these days. So, but normally you're usually at a place where you can do a quick recharge or carry along an external. Do you have an external like this, Sally?
We do, and you know, I'm just reminded as well. My husband bought a second battery because his Android phone, it's a Galaxy of some flavor. Yeah. He can switch out the battery pack. And mm-hmm. so he just bought an extra battery and keeps one in the charger always and is able to switch out and stay live that way.
That's the one there is, and if you're looking at buying smartphones, that is definitely a consideration. I would say the battery life of the iPhones are far superior than any Android phone. You know, even the newer Samsung Note 4 I have, which has a large battery, will not get as much as the iPhone that I've used in the past. So it's just kind of a fact of life. I've got to plug in it at night. With the iPhone, I could go into the next day or maybe even get 2 days out of it, depending on what you're doing. So, and then the iPad tablets are better than the Android tablets in that respect, too, at least in my experience. So whatever Apple is doing, whether it's in the software, the size of the battery, the chipset, whatever, if you're looking for battery life, I would kind of encourage people to look toward the Apple side. I like the Android stuff because it's a little bit more flexible, but you know, there's a trade-off for that. Sally, what do you put all that stuff in?
Oh,
you have a bag that you use? That you kind of your go-to travel bag?
Not very glamorous, but it does the trick. I don't know. It's just something that I got issued, and I definitely make it work for me. It has room for everything. But one bag that I have that's really nice is my camera bag. So oftentimes, if I don't want a full-size computer, I can fit my iPad in my camera bag. I do have a screen to share. It's a It's by a company called Lopro. Really high quality, nice camera bag. That's me on the beach, by the way, taking pictures with, no, it isn't. But anyway, just a great camera bag. I couldn't say, you know, more positive reviews of it. We've been really pleased with it. It has just room for everything. This front zipper, like I said, allows you to put your iPad in there. So it's just the right size to hold the iPad. The top part is a regular backpack area where I put all my things I would probably carry in a purse or whatever, and then I just have the one bag to carry. So if I'm going without a computer, that's the bag that I carry.
Cool.
And then I have my camera, obviously my Nikon, with me as well.
Yeah, I'm somewhat of a bagaholic. I like my bags. I've got a number of them, and the one I've been using for quite a while, which I really like, especially for traveling, is from Timbuktu. I've had other of their bags, but they have a great kind of a commuter bag. It's specifically made for laptops. It's TSA friendly, which means that when you put your computer in, you just open up one side of it and lay it flat. You don't have to take your computers out. Here's a picture of it kind of laying open like that, so you can run it through the scanner, and you don't have to haul everything out and push everything back in. This particular one has slot for the computer and an iPad and some cords as well. Just a nicely constructed bag. Timbuktu are not the cheapest, but they will last for a long, long time. This has kind of that nylon exterior, which is really durable, and I think they have it's a lifetime warranty on that as well, so it's worth the investment in putting into it.
Excellent.
Anything else that's in your bag, Sally?
Yeah, a few paper items always make it along for the ride. You mentioned books on your iPad. I actually carry my books along in my bag. I carry my planner when I'm traveling. I have an Erin Condren life planner. I think I've talked about that on the show before as well. And then I always have my water bottle along. And this is my Camelback, which they have available in the MLC bookstore. I just thought it was a cool-looking water bottle and bought it from the bookstore. This is actually my second one. I used one for a year and decided after a year of daily use it was time to replace it, but it has a great valve system. Anyway, I found it on a Lifehacker article, and a lot of people like Camelbacks. It's a very popular, well-made quality water bottle that I have.
Need the hydration. I bought a water bottle after I saw my youngest daughter have one of these. It's called Core, K-O-R, Core Nava, and it has a filtration system built into it. These aren't ultra expensive. I think this was like $20 or something like that, but you can kind of see, if you're watching, inside there's a little core, and at the top of it there's a little, I don't think it's actually charcoal. I think it's, I want to say, coconut filtration. And you have to, the bad part is you have to buy replacements, and I think it's, I forget how many fillings it's good for, but basically you put water in and you basically have a filtered water, you know, when you drink. So you can get the lousy hotel water or, you know, from the drinking fountain and have good tasting water regardless. And this actually goes along in the bag, and really is something that, you know, I try and do more of, drink more and more water, and this just kind of makes it a little fun, and also makes the water taste a little bit better. So
very good.
Last thing in my bag, which I usually carry and usually use depending on what I'm doing, is a USB thumb drive. Despite all the wireless you get, there always seems to be a need to transfer files, to give files to somebody or get files from somebody. So this is just kind of one of those tools that I think everybody needs. I think I've referenced this in the past. This is the Kensington HyperX USB 3 drive. I like USB 3 because it's a lot faster, so if you're doing any file transfers. These come in a lot greater capacities now. This is an older one, 64 gigabytes, but they come, I think, up to 250 gigabytes on this little stick. And they're fairly reasonable in price now, but just something good to have along. And or if you're taking pictures and want to get them off your computer or whatever, just as a backup, this is also a good little device to have.
I'm taking a trip down memory lane, Martin. I seem to remember Synod Convention a couple of years ago, and the internet went down and our whole resolution process was in the cloud. And I walked over to you and handed you a USB device, and you were on a tablet that had cell connectivity and were able to pull down what we needed. And I walked it to the print shop at the other end of the MLC campus and got what we needed moving in that process. So sometimes those USB devices are your best friends.
Good rule of tech. You need plans B, C, and D.
For sure. Yep. Nobody knew. There was no hitch in the system, but we were sweating just a little.
Because I've been playing it a little risky lately, because the last couple presentations I've done have been with Google Slides, and I have not actually taken the time. I think you can get those locally, but I have not taken the time to do that. So I was just kind of counting that I had solid Wi-Fi or solid internet. But you can't always do that, and there's always going to be some kind of hiccup. So I think I covered everything. Let me just double check my list here. Check in the bag to make sure I covered everything. I think I did. That's kind of what I take along with. It's gotten, actually, over the years, that list has gotten shorter and shorter, actually. You'd think, with the more tech that's out there, it's gotten longer and longer. But with the advent of the internet and the ability to get online, you don't need kind of the external hard drives and some of the other things that we had, and Bluetooth, some of those things have made life a lot easier too. So,
yep, I think we've covered all mine as well, but I sure do hope I don't forget any of it the next time I'm traveling.
Important. Then let's move on to our news in tech. You've got a little article here about YouTube for Kids.
Yeah, I thought it was worth revisiting YouTube for Kids, because we actually talked about this on the show a few weeks ago when it was launched. A new app that they put out for mobile devices from Google, and they're under a bit of fire as of this week. People are complaining that their app is promoting pay-for products. So games and candy and food and things like that that are pretty regulated with television advertising and such are finding their way into the mix. So on the screen is suggested videos, but it actually includes things that maybe are commercially endorsed or whatever. And so some groups are filing some complaints against Google/YouTube for this policy and looking into it further. Google issued a statement and said the company worked with numerous partners and child advocacy groups when developing YouTube Kids, and that the critics are contending that no ad-supported service for children can ever be acceptable. They disagree. They think their great content shouldn't be reserved for only those families who can afford it. So they're trying to pay for the product along the way with some, what they say is, well-vetted and properly placed commercial information in their products. So
yeah, two things strike me, Sally. Whenever you're messing with people's kids, it can be really serious stuff. If somebody goes too far, somebody thinks you've gone too far to the left or the right, you're going to hear about it. So Google probably should have expected this. And two, whenever you begin to think you should be able to curate content and suggest, hey, this would be good for your kids, that's going to cause controversy too, because every parent is going to say, well, yes or no, or they want to be the deciding factor and not Google. So there's going to be some, I think there's going to be some controversy here.
Yeah. Interesting. We'll follow it and see what happens. It's new territory.
I think in general it's a good idea. I think kids are getting out on the internet, obviously, and just kind of the Wild West that is YouTube is not a great experience. So trying to put some boundaries around that is probably a noble effort. But again, they're probably going to run into some challenges with, you're not going to please everybody.
Sure.
Let's move on to our Wells Now section, and we've got some great news from the Wells Tech Conference.
Yeah, we are giving you a second chance to get that early bird discounted rate. Previously, we had set April 1st as the deadline for the early bird rate of $199 to register for the conference. We've extended that to tax day, April 15th. So if you're interested in attending the conference and want to save a few bucks, get registered by April 15th. I'm getting super excited for, as I see more and more registrations come in, Martin. Some of the pre-conference sessions are already filling up. Lots of people there. What I'm most excited about is there's lots of new names that I haven't heard from in the past, and so I'm looking forward to meeting new Wells Techers from across the country. We've got people coming from the West Coast for this, just from all over. So should be a good time. We've definitely put our work into putting together a great slate of presenters, over 100 breakout sessions that folks can pick from. So come and be a part of Wells Tech Conference 2015.
And if you're thrifty, April 15th is the date because you can save $25. So.
Yep. The web address is wells.net/WellsTechConf, C-O-N-F.
Very good. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, I just came across an interesting article from, I believe, today's Washington Post. The title is, Why Digital Natives Prefer Reading in Print. Yes, you read that right. Interesting article about today's college students and their preference for traditional textbooks over e-books, and how they just really like how they smell, and scribbling in the margins and underlining interesting sentences and folding the page corners to mark his place. And it gets into a lot more around the controversy between, you know, our books, traditional books going away in place of e-books, and the pros and cons for that. But in general, textbook purchases are only 9% e-books as of the fall semester last year. So I think we've got a long way to go if we're going to go all digital or paperless in the process. And they've got some good pros and cons that they bring out in this article.
So e-book or electronic textbooks are roughly 10% of all purchases. What are they doing at MLC, for instance?
I don't know the answer to that, except I do know that my son personally doesn't have any e-books that he's using. He purchased them just the good old-fashioned way through the bookstore and some on Amazon, and everything is paper. So
it's interesting because most kids rent textbooks. I would say that they, I don't know what the statistics are, but I would probably think that most kids are renting and then reselling, or buying and reselling. So that whole concept of writing, marking them up, writing in the margins, whatever, probably isn't quite as useful in that context, but we'll see. And if kids are in this digital world, I would think that kind of the paper world is a new, a novel concept for some that have grown up in digital, right? So it's anything that's
true.
New. But I would think the textbook publishers would want to go more digital. That's probably a better business model for them. The consumable costs of paper and those and shipping and those kinds of things are got to be expensive. So digital, I would think they'd want to push towards. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next 10, 15 years with that whole concept and with the advent and the pricing for tablets probably coming way down, much lower than it is today, makes this digital textbook concept maybe even more attractive to a lot of universities. And you hear about a lot of universities requiring tablets, you know, in the hands of the kids. Mm-hmm. So interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So give that article a read from the Washington Post. My tip or pick of the week, let me pull up my article here. This is a little application, mobile application that I've talked about in the past called Office Lens. Used to be for Windows Phone only, but now Microsoft has released it for Android and iPhone. On Android, it's in beta. On iPhone, it's the full release. But Office Lens is for anybody who needs to capture analog content and put it into OneNote. So for instance, you're working on the whiteboard and you want it, you know, a lot of people will take a picture of it, but sometimes, you know, there's glare on the screen and it's a bad angle or whatever. So this little application will capture what's on that whiteboard and then square it up. It'll even do character recognition on it, remove the glare and kind of give it a nice background and then make it digital for you. It'll do the same thing for receipts. So when you're traveling, this kind of ties in nicely with, you know, kind of the travel theme, what's in your bag. This is an app that you really want on your phone as well if you want to kind of go paperless. So just take a picture of the receipt. It will de-skew it. It will allow you to enhance the text. So sometimes, you know, receipts are, you can't get a great picture of them depending on the lighting or whatever. This will enhance the picture so that you can see, you know, the exact copy on the receipt, and then store it immediately in OneNote, which is the application that I use to store all the receipts. You can take pictures with it as well. Just a nice little handy app. There are a bunch of other apps that do this on the iPhone. Genius Scan is one that I had used before, but this one is free. Works perfectly with OneNote on your tablet or on your iPhone or your Android phone, and just does a nice job in capturing those analog things that you need in digital form, and you can kind of pitch the receipt. So that's Office Lens for Android or iPhone. This article that we'll put a link to in the show notes walks you through how to actually get the one for Android. Since it's in beta, you have to kind of join a beta testers program, and everything's free and it's not that hard. But the iPhone, you can actually just search Office Lens in the store, and it will come up for you. So good little utility if you want to go paperless.
Made me smile, Martin, because it reminded me of a meeting I was in recently. I have a junior in high school, and it's the tradition at Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School that the junior parents put on a party after prom to keep the kids safe. We rent a location, and the kids are kind of locked in for the rest of the night to play games and hang out and stuff. So I went to an after prom meeting, and they were sharing some paperwork and things, and somebody needed a copy of it, and there was no copier, and I said, well, just make a picture with your phone.
Yep.
And honestly, I brought the meeting to a halt. They thought I was like a deity in their presence. They were just like, wow, you're so good at tech. And it was just so fun.
Never,
you know,
taking a picture of the phone. Yeah.
Anyway. Fun stuff.
So Office Lens is a very, I've really been impressed with what Microsoft has done with their apps on iPhone, iPad, and the Android stuff. Quality stuff, and all free. So check it out.
Excellent.
Time to move along to community feedback.
And we have some from, oh my goodness, I'm tongue-tied, some feedback from our friend Pastor Rob Gunther up in Kenai, Alaska, believe it or not. Pastor Gunther is a great source for ideas and interesting finds on the internet. And one that he shared with us this week was a book that he's been reading called Death by Meeting. Martin, I bet you've read this before, haven't you?
I have read it, and we actually, whether you know it or not, we've implemented some of the suggestions in it in some of our staff meetings and other meetings as well. Excellent book. It's an interesting read because it's not just kind of a, you know, how to, it is actually a story. So it talks about, it's called a leadership fable about solving the most painful problem in business, which is meetings. And really good stuff in there, kind of a timeless book. I think it was written in the 80s or 90s, I want to say. I don't know what the exact publishing date is, but just really valuable in a quick read. So if you're kind of struggling with how to work and organize meetings, this would be a great quick read. I think it's probably on Audible as well. In fact, that's probably where I read it, was on Audible. So
it says March 2004, so still over 10 years old. Speaking of when things were published, did you hear that there's a new Getting Things Done edition that was just released recently, very recently, a 2015
edition.
It's Getting Things Done. It's an improvement. So, also on
David Allen is the author of that. So, if you, that's another good read if you're looking at productivity stuff.
Sure. Also on Amazon.com, Rod wrote to us about the Matchmaker, and this is just a super interesting find. So Rob listens to a lot of Audible books. Martin, you, I think, do that as well. Mm-hmm. And what he found is that Amazon, who owns Audible, will actually give you cut rate deals on your ebook library, your Kindle library, for any books that they also have Audible versions of. So you go to this website. It's we'll have the link in the show notes. It's got Matchmaker in it. It's an Amazon site. You're logged into your Amazon account. They know what you have on your Kindle, in your Kindle library, and they analyze it and match up any Audible books that exist for your Kindle library, and they give you this huge discount. So here's a couple of examples that are in my Kindle library where the list price of this book is $18.50. You can upgrade and get the Audible version for $1.99. List price of this Fairy Tales book is $24.95. You can get it on Audible for 99 cents. So all these really great cut rate deals on your Audible library. And Rob writes, he listens a lot. He drives a long way in Alaska just to different circuit meetings, 6 hours round trip. And he doesn't listen at normal speed. Martin, I don't know if you listen at double or even triple speed sometimes.
I can't do triple speed. My ears are not that fast. But I do double speed. I do double speed quite often. So.
Yeah. And he says he can consume a lot of books that way. So he often purchases Kindle books or finds them for free because he follows different free listings of Kindle books, and he's really added a lot to his Audible library for a very, very affordable price with this Matchmaker option. So if you're into Audible, this might be something you want to check out.
Yeah, and you don't just have to be a commuter to enjoy Audible books. I listen to it on the treadmill or the bike, you know, just walking around outside, whatever. You do, you have different opportunities to be productive in that time. So, you know, along with your smart device or whatever, good choices. Thanks, Rob.
Yeah. Quick shout out to Adam Bowl, who is a Twitterer and who is also coming to Wells Tech Conference this summer.
Yay.
He says he's excited for all the great presentations, and he included a really interesting hashtag. It's hashtag gonna win the Chromebook. I think he's talking about our giveaways, Martin. We're giving away a Chromebook Pixel this summer at Wells Tech Conference, and Adam says he's going to be the winner, so we'll see if that comes true.
All right. I love the hashtag.
Yeah, pretty cool. A couple more finds that I tagged on Digo. One is for QR Treasure Hunt Generator. Interesting concept. What they do is prompt you to put in some questions and answers, and then they generate a QR code for each of your questions. So you're to put the QR codes and perhaps around your classroom. Students would then scan the QR codes, read the question, and write down the answer or log the answer somehow, and then you can have them turn those in, and the person with the most correct answers wins a prize or whatever it may be. I thought it was a great way, a great idea to use QR codes, and perhaps some teachers out there would want to make use of it in their classrooms. Maybe we'll make use of it at Wells Tech Conference. Who knows?
You never know. Yes.
And then finally, an email came out here at MLC. We talked recently about computer viruses and the rotten threats that are out there constantly. There's a new one, an article released April 3rd about a Pac-Man scheme that uses a Dropbox link to gobble victims. And it looks pretty sophisticated. It's just a link in an email. It looks legitimate. And yet, then your computer's taken ransom and you can't get access to any of your files. So just be super leery of any emails that you get from anyone that you don't know or that you get that require you to log in or click on a link. Perhaps it's better to go to the website and, you know, type in the website yourself rather than clicking on a link in an email. So
yep.
Just another reminder about that. Okay. That's all I have for community feedback this week.
Yeah, we would love to hear from anybody else who'd like to contribute to the show. It's so easy to do. Just go to wellstech.wells.net And across the top of the page, upper right, you see all kinds of links. Your favorite social networks are there. A link to our listserv. You could post a question there. We regularly monitor that and bring in some of the discussions that we have there into the show. You can email us, wellstech@wells.net. You can leave a comment right on the show notes page on any of the previous episodes. Or leave a voicemail. There's a link on the right side of the page there to leave a good old-fashioned voicemail. Really easy to do. So if you're so inclined, if you'd like to contribute to the show, comment on something we've said, add something of your own, provide maybe a ministry resource or a review of a product that you've tried, please do so and add to the conversation. Sally, ministry resources, we've got something to share this week.
We do. I gave a little thought to what I did over Easter, and one thing that we did was my family participated in an Easter for Kids event. So if you're looking at the screen that I'm sharing on the video, you'll see my guys.
Those people.
Yeah, yes. Dressed up as if they're living during Jesus' day. Actually, my son Luke was portraying Jesus at the Easter for Kids event.
Minus the glasses, yes.
Yeah, he took his glasses off for that part. But yeah, they all had on their tinny shoes and things under the costumes. Anyway, at St. Paul's, they built this big empty tomb for Easter Sunday morning. It's really nice. That's my boy Luke. He trusted his brothers to carry him into the tomb. And it was a neat thing to be a part of, but it reminded me that St. Paul's has this wonderful closet of these really simple costumes, very easy to make, and they use them for many different events. You can use them, obviously, for vacation Bible school type events, Easter for kids, Christmas for kids, that kind of thing. They've used them in parades, you know, just any kind of event where you'd want to have Bible type costume. They have a wide variety of them. They're really large. Actually, you probably could see my guys are kind of skinny, and they all have belts on, kind of hiking them up and stuff. Just big, huge sacks, basically, so that they would fit anybody. And I found that if you search on Pinterest, you can find ideas and examples of these types of costumes and ways to make them via this Pinterest board. So our ministry resource is actually going to be our second ever Pinterest search, and it's going to be for Bible costumes. And it might be something that your ladies group could take on and over time just build up a collection of these type of costumes that you could
that's
use.
That's a great application for Pinterest. Pinterest Bible costume board. And it seems like there's just a ton of them on there.
Yeah, that's what Pinterest is for sure. And, you know, it just struck me they're super easy to make and such a valuable asset for our congregation. So thought I'd share that idea.
Nice. Very nice. Thanks. All right. We have a featured video this week and coming from MLC.
Yeah. MLC's College Choir, which is their biggest performance group, recently came back from a tour over spring break. They had a beautiful concert that they presented all across the Midwest, and they did a homecoming concert here at MLC a week or two ago, and they've archived the video of their homecoming concert, so if you didn't get a chance to hear the choir on their tour, you can listen in. Maybe you did get a chance and you'd like to hear it again. We'll include that video on our Wells Tech page, so check out the show notes.
Nice. Well, Sally, that's going to about do it for this week. Next week, I'll be back in the hopefully warmer weather than I left of Wisconsin, and we'll be doing this little show again, and we'll be finishing off our book review, and that's What's Best Next by Matt Furman. This will be part 7. Just kind of the end chapters, kind of a recap, bringing it all together when we're talking about Christian productivity and how a Christian can manage or steward their time and their talents. Just a great read. If you haven't read the book or haven't listened to previous episodes where we've talked about it, you can kind of go back and listen to those. But definitely grab the book and take advantage of some really good, I think, step-by-steps, but also just general approaches to how a Christian should be thinking about managing their life and their time and figuring out what they should be doing in the Lord's name. So,
looking forward to that discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Sally. Thanks for sharing what's in your bag, and I'm going to get back to vacation here.
Good idea. Safe travels.
Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.